You're listening to the Food Talk Show on channelradio.co.uk. It's the Food Talk Show on channelradio.co.uk with me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Paul.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to this show today in particular.
Oh, so am I.
Because we've got that, am I allowed to say crazy? That's actually probably not a very nice thing to say, but we've got a guest.
I wonder who you might be talking about.
We've got a guest that both of us know quite well, so we're looking forward to that. But I've also got the lovely Anna Sward. And she's got a really interesting product that's called Protein Pow. Protein Pow.
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 Is that a boom?
Yeah.
Pow.
Yeah. So I've got a packet of it in front of me, and I've been reading quite a lot about it, and I'm very, very interested in talking to Anna about that. But we've got Hillary because we all know that she's...
Because we could.
We all know that she's a great businesswoman, so she's got all these business awards that she runs and the business magazines that she runs. But she's fallen in love with potatoes. She's fallen in love with potatoes.
Easily done.
Easily done. I love potatoes.
She's a chip off the old block. We could pun our way right the way through this, but I think we won't.
I think you will.
Yeah.
And she set up something called World of Potatoes, so we're really, really looking forward to that. Just in honour of Hillary, we're doing, We Hate Heston, we're doing How to Make the Perfect Mashed Potato, because that's a great, great food stuff.
I do like a bit of mashed potato, I have to say.
I love it.
No, I love a bit of mashed potato.
I only really like it, to be honest, if it's got gravy with it, which probably is a little bit down market. Anyway, there we go.
Well, there's nothing wrong with gravy.
No.
There's nothing wrong with gravy. No,
proper gravy, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously.
Shall I tell you a little bit about Anna?
Oh, go on, yeah.
This is a really interesting product. Protein Pow is an all-purpose cooking mix. Probably not quite what you would think. And it's specially designed to make healthy eating easy, convenient, and absolutely delicious. And the key thing, which is really helpful for you, Paul, is you don't need any cooking experience to use it. So she created it in January 2011, and she began a blog writing about loads of things she was interested in, like exercise. I mean, she's sitting next to me, and she looks a paragon of health.
I know, it's horrible, isn't it?
It is actually really annoying, thank God it's radio.
It really is annoying. She's got a really clear complexion and all that.
She's really beautiful and pretty, and it's really annoying.
So yeah, what's all that about?
Thank goodness it's radio.
Yeah.
And she's got this passion for creating healthy and delicious food.
Wow.
So she started to get really interested in protein. And just to fill you in, Paul, protein is obviously very important. It's a key nutrient. It makes up every cell in our bodies, our hair, our skin, our muscles.
Excuse me, don't try and be funny.
And yes, and besides water, it's the most abundant organic compound in our bodies.
So you're saying I've got no hair because of my lack of protein? Possibly, is that what you're telling me?
Possibly you need more protein.
Right,
could be that. You can get these protein shakes. You know, when you're on a diet, some people in our office do that. But apparently you can get these sort of protein shakes. And quite a lot of guys use it for the bodybuilding thing.
Yep,
obviously,
sure.
Clearly you don't, Paul. But how do you add a bit of protein to your cooking when you've got your favourite treats and desserts and things like that without using refined flours or added sugars or preservatives? Well, this is what Anna's come up with.
Wow.
So... do you want to play? Do we have to do your cheesy tune?
Yeah, we do.
And then we'll talk to Anna.
I.
You're so excited.
I'm really excited for this because I haven't played it for ages.
No, I'm guessing it must be awful.
Yeah, and the rest
terrible.
Of you won't have a clue what's going on here.
No.
But I was looking at Anna's Twitter feed earlier.
Yes.
And she had a fabulous recipe for banana cake on there. And do you know what?
Oh, no.
It made me think.
Bring you the banana split show.
Sorry about that.
That was awful.
The banana splits.
That's awful. I used to watch that programme when I was a kid. I think it must have been on a Saturday morning or something like
that. It was,
that,
yeah. The banana splits. You don't rubbish. Know what that was about,
no,
do you, Anna?
Sorry.
No.
Notice they haven't repeated it. That's probably because it really is rubbish.
No, well, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. The banana splits was brilliant. Mm. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Should we talk to Anna?
Yeah.
So I've got a pack in front of me called Protein Cooking Mix, and it's about the size of an A4 piece of paper, and it's just a sachet, and it's got Protein Cooking Mix. Anna, tell me how on earth you made a journey from 2011 as a blogger to producing this stuff in a packet.
So I started proteinpow.com, the website, as a collection of protein cooking recipes because I was doing a PhD in sociolinguistics. And as a hobby...
As you would. Yeah.
Okay. I think Paul did that as well.
Yeah. I don't even know what she said then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I would go to the gym a lot and exercise, and then I would eat protein powder treats. And most people would understand of a protein powder, like you said, as a bodybuilding manly thing that you use as a shake, whereas for me, I saw it as an ingredient, and I made cakes.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I've seen this kind of stuff hanging about when I accidentally walk past the gym. And is that the kind of thing like whey powder and stuff like that? Is that the same kind of thing?
Yeah. So back in 2011, I was doing my undergraduate degree. When I was doing my undergraduate degree in 2002 to 2006, I was in a really small town, and there was just one health food shop, and I would go in there to buy protein, and it used to be packaged in very manly. I think there was a bodybuilding man on the cover, you know, biceps really ripped.
Sure. Yeah.
And I used to be a bit, well, the woman at the store used to look at me and say, "You're buying this?" You know, it wasn't very common that that women, especially my age, would consume these things. But the industry has changed a lot from back in 2002 to 2006, even 2011 to now, to actually include protein powder more in the mainstream.
Okay.
So why did you feel that you needed this extra protein? You know, what does it give to you that perhaps just you don't get in your normal diet? You know, and that's what sort of inspired you to go and add it to your diet?
Yeah, so I like to think of protein powder as an ingredient, and protein is something that we all consume. And the way that I was using it in, you know, healthy cakes and cookies and muffins, to me was more fun than eating it as a shake. And, you know, protein is great for feeling fuller for longer, for recovery before and after exercise. So I just saw protein powder cooking as a really fun way to actually include protein in one's diet without relying overly on chicken and meat and eggs.
So quite good if you're vegetarian or vegan, for instance, making sure you're getting that level of protein.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's why the protein powder cooking mixes, they came out in October. And one of them is vegan, and it is exactly designed for, well, vegans to actually make protein bars and cookies and things like that. And the reason I created them was because from 2011 and before that, I would be using major brands of protein powder. And as I learned more and more about nutrition, I realized that, you know, a lot of this stuff has extra artificial ingredients, artificial sweeteners, artificial, you know, bulk ingredients and low quality protein.
Gluten and stuff like that.
Yeah, gluten and, you know, basically things that I became more skeptical about.
Sure.
And I wanted something that made it easy because if you cook with a whey protein or a pea protein that you find at the store, it's actually really hard to end up with something perfect that tastes like food and feels like food and is not just a cardboardy, you know, dry thing. And so that's why I launched the mixes. They're just a combination of flour and is coconut flour and protein, but okay, they can be used with, like, flour and baking.
Because
on you guys banana bread
on your packet here it says it's GMO free, gluten free, soya free, and suitable for vegans. So literally anybody can use this in their diet.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of weeks ago we were at the BBC Good Food Show and we had our own feature area and we had workshops with 230 people and they all came in, they made protein balls and protein bars, and it was great to see a really huge amount of people come in from different ages. So we had grandmas there, we had kids, we had, you know, we just make protein part of healthy eating and making healthy snacks. So we combined it with nut butters and nuts and seeds. And
so you're almost using this like you would flour. So on the back of this packet here, we've got how to make your own protein bar. You take some of the cooking mix that you've got, and then you add sort of syrup or sunflower or cinnamon or whatever. And as you say, there's no cooking involved. So essentially, this is almost like a cake mix, or you can use it as a cake mix almost.
Yeah, so you can bake with it. So I brought you guys some of the banana bread, which I use like a substitute for.
I might even play the banana splits again.
Where is that? Where is it? I can't see it. It's not in the studio.
I can't see it.
No, it's in my backpack.
Oh, I'm going to have to wait.
I thought for, you know, as a post-show treat.
No. We're not having that.
I might nip out and get those in a
minute. We're getting that now and we're eating that on air, don't you worry.
All right, yeah. I'll bring it.
Absolutely.
No, I was going to say, you can use it as a regular flour, so you can substitute a normal white flour for it.
Could you actually make kind of normalish bread out of it?
Yeah, so the banana bread that I'll show you, it is basically like you would use any flour, but it uses a mix. So it's gluten-free and it's higher in protein.
Fantastic.
And I sweeten it with dates, and that's on my backpack.
Yeah, Sue's run off with the cake now, the banana bread. While Sue's messing about with that, I want to ask you a question. I don't want to deflect you too much, but I'm kind of interested in this. Can you give me a bit of background to why protein? Because I'm one of those awful people that I'm a yo-yo dieter. I'm really, really, really brilliant at losing weight, and then I'm even better at putting it back on. And you read lots of diets, and people go, don't eat carbohydrates, and then they go, don't eat protein, don't eat this, don't eat that, da 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 da. And then all of a sudden, a diet comes out that says, you must eat nothing but protein, or you must eat nothing but carbohydrates.
It's very confusing.
And you get very confused. Yeah. I just wondered what the background is to, and you're absolutely right, loads of fitness people and bodybuilders and everything are very into protein.
Yeah.
What is the bit of science that makes protein?
I mean, the way I understand protein and the reason why I integrate it in my diet as well is because it allows me to eat foods that I crave. Like, I make pizza with protein powder, and I make so I think one of the secrets for, you know, most people that lose weight, they go on a diet and then they fall off it because it's not sustainable, it's not satisfying, it's not enjoyable.
You keep talking, I'm eating the bread.
Okay, good.
I'm eating the banana bread as well.
That is horrible. Sorry, carry on.
I'm posting the recipe for the bread on the website if people are interested to make it. But and one of the things that I think is most important when following any diet or just, you know, eating on a day-to-day basis is to eat food one enjoys and loves. I mean, I've always been a massive foodie, and I don't believe in deprivation. I think deprivation is what leads people to yo-yo and, you know, go
absolutely
on and on, because it's not sustainable. It's just...
And of course... It's also everything that they chuck into processed food and bought food, isn't it? There's a chemical concoction of stuff mostly designed to make you want to eat more of it.
Yeah, but Geeta was interesting last week, wasn't she, Paul, in that she was saying, she's a sort of specialist in detoxification, and she was saying that the problem with diets is that you reward yourself, you know, and then you deprive yourself, in an alternate way, which you do a lot, Paul.
Yeah.
But also she's saying that, you know, just have whatever you want, just have it in the proportion that you should have it.
Absolutely.
And it's the depriving yourself of things that you want actually makes you crave them more. So when you come off the diet, you probably eat more of them. That's the problem.
And products that are healthier and have less chemicals and less additives in them tend to be more filling, you know, because they're natural kind of products.
I can't answer you because I'm eating this banana bread.
I know.
I mean, that's one of the things about protein. And, you know, a lot of people may go on a low-calorie diet without really paying attention to what they're eating on a day-to-day basis. But without actually incorporating protein in your diet, you're going to be hungry all the time. You're not going to be very energetic. You're going to feel, you know, just hungry and sad and not very, you know, powerful.
This banana bread's lovely, isn't it, Paul?
No, it's disgusting. I've only eaten four slices.
So explain to me how you made the banana bread. We've got this sort of cooking mix here.
Yeah.
You literally, as Paul was saying earlier, literally use it like a bread mixer, I guess.
Yeah, so to make that banana bread, I just combined the whey protein mix, so the blue one, the one that's made out of whey protein and coconut flour and gluten-free oats. So I combined it with a couple of eggs, some date syrup, pistachio nuts, actual bananas, and coconut oil. And then I baked it all together. I'll put the recipe on the site, but it's all really,
it's really
nutritious.
Nice.
I'm in love with her.
It's really lovely.
I just thought I'd let you know that.
Very nice and very good for you, as you said. This one's... that in front of me is a green packet, and this is called pea protein. How does that work?
So there's one of the things, back when I started the website, and, you know, I was cooking with all kinds of protein powder. So whey protein is the most popular, which comes from dairy, the manufacturer of cheese. It's a byproduct. Pea protein is becoming really popular now. You see it incorporated in a lot of foods, And some people sell it as a smoothie itself. It's more savory. It's made out of basically yellow peas pressed together.
And your use of that, is that because it's a vegan-based product rather than a dairy-based product?
It bakes differently in a way when you bake it solo, and it tastes a bit more savory, so I use it to make more savory things.
Okay.
But in the context of the mix, they're both pretty interchangeable in terms of making bars and cookies. And
the good thing about your product is that you don't need to cook.
I finished my bread.
You want some more?
Yes, please.
There's some more here.
Nice.
But you don't need to have to be able to cook for this. So you can actually just add it to whatever you're having.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I mean, one of the things, when I was starting the website and growing or following,
thank you,
I noticed that, you know, a lot of people would follow that don't cook, have never cooked. I'd get pictures from guys saying, this is the first thing I've ever baked in my whole entire life.
Right.
And the whole secret of it, or the whole notion of the brand, is to make it easy and accessible. So we basically, you chuck everything into a bowl and you bake it or fry it or mold it. And my first cookbook that came out in 2015, first one with a publisher, I was talking with my editor about it, and she said, you know, what temperature do you, which ingredients separate into, you know, dry and wet? And I said, no, it's a matter of chuck it in a bowl and bake it. And she was like, really? We usually add more, you know, detail. But to me, it's really important to make this as easy and foolproof,
yeah,
and just bang it all in there, out.
And the great thing about this is you can make your own protein bars. So, you know, you can add all the things you like, nuts or honey or all the things that you want, and actually create your own protein bars, which is probably the point of it.
I mean, we made, at the BBC Good Food Show, we made thousands and thousands of balls, and because you don't need to bake them. You just chuck it all in, four ingredients, press them into balls or bars, and bam, eat them.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
And then presumably keep them in a Tupperware box or something. And,
oh, yeah,
and
you put
just
them in the fridge.
Or the fridge, and then just pick them up every time you need one.
Yeah, I mean, we have readers that just get the mix. They make, you know, 30 bars. They put them in the freezer, they defrost one every day and take it to work or school.
Very, very sensible. Now, you've got a website, obviously, if anybody's interested in these. I have to say that banana bread tastes lovely.
That is fabulous.
Really nice.
That,
yeah,
is absolutely fabulous. I want to ask Anna some other questions now.
Should I just say the website name, just so everybody knows? It's proteinpow.com.
Okay.
So look on there. It's great.
Fabulous. I wanted to kind of, in conjunction with that, talk a little bit about the business side of what she's doing. Yeah, so she's made all these wonderful products, and you can chuck them in a bowl and make stuff out of them that you can consume. And I've just eaten 4 or 5 slices of banana bread, which has completely ruined my diet again.
So have I.
Yeah,
it's really nutritious. It's great.
Absolutely. I feel my hair's growing.
Powerful.
And everything.
Yeah.
You'll be full up for the next 2-3 hours now.
Absolutely.
At least.
Absolutely. Which is brilliant. But I just want to focus just for a moment, if I may, on the business side of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So 2011, did you say you started producing this powder?
No. 2011, I started the website as a hobby. I was
right,
doing the PhD.
Okay.
I had to graduate first. And then I started working with supplement companies here and in the U.S. I ran workshops. I did recipes for their packaging, for little promotional booklets. I ran workshops with their professional athletes who they sponsor.
Right.
And then I self-published a cookbook in 2013, and then I got a book deal for a big boom protein pow cooking Bible thing in 2015.
Right.
And then I released an app, the Protein Pow app. Then these mixes came out in October. We're going to be in Holland and Barrett next week, which is really cool.
Wow,
that's fantastic.
And I got a book deal for another book in 2017.
She's a clever girl, isn't she?
She's an overachiever. You can tell that.
She's a really clever girl.
As far as the protein powder is concerned, I just want to kind of dwell on that for a second or two, because you started knocking this stuff out and putting it in lovely design packages and all the rest of it. How are you making this? You know, is it a kitchen table type of operation, or do you have a massive manufacturing plant, or is it outsourced? How are you doing it?
Yeah, well, we have to have someone else manufacture it just because we're dealing with thousands of units every day. So
exactly.
You know, doing it in the kitchen would be suicidal in a way.
Yeah, sure.
Which is plus, you know, you have to have all these facilities. And
no, absolutely. And one of the reasons for asking the question is we quite often on this show get people that have developed a new product on their kitchen table.
Yeah.
And then taking it from the kitchen to mass manufacture is always one of their big problems.
The hardest step.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
You've already kind of outsourced the manufacture there to a big manufacturer.
I think to deal with stores and major grocery and stuff like that,
you've got to produce it in volume.
Yeah,
no, absolutely right.
That.
Fantastic.
Well, it's brilliant. And as I said, proteinpow.com is the website. Really interesting stuff on there. And I can't believe what it tastes like. It tastes, and I feel really full.
You can make pizza with that. Well, you can make pizza crust with that.
She's coming around my place later to knock me up a pizza with this
as well. Pancakes, really good pancakes.
Yeah, yeah. Pancakes. So fantastic. Go and check that out. Very good for you, of course.
Absolutely. I'm feeling on top of the world now. Mm. I've had a few slices of banana bread and I'm ready to take on the world. And
ready to take on Hilary Steele.
No, let's not get carried away. Yeah. There's not enough protein in the world, to help me do that.
To take on Hilary Steele.
I was going to say that on the website itself, there's over 1500 recipes for all kinds of protein powders, not just our mixes, but pretty much if anyone has any protein powder at home or they want to buy some and are interested in using it in delicious food opposed to shake, check out the website.
That's cool. That's the place to go. And you can get this stuff in Ocado as well if you want to order it online.
Okay, fantastic.
What should we do next, Paul?
I'll tell you what. Should we
do a bit of We Hate Heston?
Should we do a bit of We Hate Heston first and then we'll play some more cheesy tunage?
And then we'll go for it. We are going to have to talk to her, aren't we? So
we are.
For We Hate Heston, I'm not going to actually do a sort of cooking thing, in someone's house this time. I'm going to talk about mashed potato in honour of Hilary and her her spud venture. So because Hilary's here, I'm going to give my recipe and tips for the perfect mashed potato. And let's face it, it's one of the most comforting side dishes of all time. But if you don't do it properly, I don't know if you've ever made mash, Paul. Mm. It can get gluey if you overwork it, and sometimes it's not as fluffy and as lovely as you would like. So these are my top tips for fluffy mashed potato.
No, I just get it out of the tin.
Oh, please don't say that.
And put water in it.
It makes me really upset when you say that. So the first tip really is make sure you use the right type of potato. So choosing the right type of potato is key. Don't use waxy varieties of potato. You need starchy potatoes. And if you look on the packet or you ask, whoever you go to the shop with, they'll tell you which ones are the starchy potatoes. If they're not starchy, they don't break down well and they don't absorb all that lovely butter and cream. So you need starchy potatoes.
I'm in a frivolous mood today. I'm in a frivolous mood. I thought when you said starchy potatoes, you were talking about an advertising agency. Starchy and starchy. Sorry.
Oh, dear. So use the right potato. Then another important thing, cut the potatoes so they're the same size. If you've got different size of potatoes, they'll cook at different rates. So make sure that they're the same size and make sure the water is salted. Now, I don't know if anybody's been to Wheeler's in Whitstable. That fantastic. Mm. Have you been there, Paul?
I have
absolutely
indeed.
Absolutely amazing
yeah.
place. The lovely chef there told me the best way to cook potatoes is to actually put 2 or 3 tablespoons of salt in the water. Tablespoons, not a little bit.
What's that, boil it in the Dead Sea, basically?
It is. And he said you should barely be able to taste the water because it would make you sick. It had so much salt in. And his top tip is that basically what the potatoes do is they absorb as much salt as they need. Mm. You don't absorb more than that. And then it means that you don't have to use loads of salt afterwards. And what's happening is the potatoes are cooking in the salt. They take the salt that they want. You don't have to add salt afterwards. So that's a really good tip.
So let's quantify that again. 2 or 3
tablespoons huge
of salt.
Amount of salt, yeah, wow. in. And, okay. and that's the best way to make sure it absorbs exactly the right amount of salt, but you don't then need to add salt afterwards.
Okay.
What you need to do, of course, is make sure that you start with cold water. So don't shortcut and boil the kettle and put potatoes in.
See, you're ruining all my culinary secrets
you
now.
You do it wrong, that's why. What that means is that basically the potatoes then cook at the right, speed. Mm. If you put in hot water to start with, the outsides will get cooked, but the insides won't. So start off with cold water, get it all boiling, and that increases your chance of even cooking. Don't cook the potatoes in a small saucepan where they're all crowded. Make sure it's in a big pan. They've got loads of space to move around and boil. And they're at least an inch above the potatoes. So make sure there's at least an inch of water above the potatoes. And then the key thing, and again, this is what they taught me at Wheeler's, is you must mix in the butter and the cream or creme fraiche at the same temperature as the potatoes. So what you need to do is drain your potatoes, mm-hmm. take the lid off, mm-hmm. let them cool down for 10 minutes. So you're mm-hmm. bringing the temperature down.
Right.
Then you need to just warm up the butter and the cream just a little bit. Don't let it boil so that reaches the same temperature as the potatoes.
Right.
Then when you mix it, it will really, really absorb.
Wow.
Really, really absorb all that lovely stuff. And then the thing is, you need to obviously bash it around a bit to get the mash, but don't overwork it. Certainly don't use a food processor or anything like that. If you mash them up,
you need a masher.
Because then you release all the starch pool, and that's what makes it all gluey. So don't overwork the potatoes, and just mash them lightly, and then add your favourite flavours or toppings. So you could add a handful of crispy fried shallots. That's really nice. Mm. Or my favourite, I like putting in a tablespoon of mustard or horseradish or anything like that. Or, of course, you could just grate a little bit of cheese on top and add that in.
I'll tell you what I do.
What's that?
I make a little volcano out of my potatoes and I fill the centre with gravy.
Oh, dear.
No, I do.
Oh,
honestly. Or sometimes if I'm feeling really posh, I make a little volcano and fill the top with a poached egg.
Do you?
Yeah.
And you still don't understand why you're single, but
no.
We all know. So, and the other thing is, don't let the mashed potato hang around. It's pretty time sensitive. You need to serve it really, really quickly. So get it in, dish it up, bit of gravy, I don't know, sausages, anything. But, you know, mash is just one of the best things in the world, I think.
Absolutely. So on that note,
top tips for best mashed potato. Fantastic. You're going to play me some horrendous
music. On that note, I think we're going to play some cheesy tunage.
Now promise you won't laugh. I haven't any flowers and I haven't any grass. But now I'm going to dig and plant, and soon I'll have a show. With a bit of sun and a bit of rain, there'll be a lovely row. Oh, one potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. Oh, one potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. I'm going to grow so many things, I'll surely never starve. Cabbages, cauliflowers, I won't do things by halves. I'll plant a row of runner beans, they'll grow so very high. With a bit of sun and a bit of rain, they'll reach up to the sky. Oh, one potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. One potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. One potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. One potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. So if you're ever down our way, please drop in for tea. We'll have lettuces and radishes, they'll all be grown by me. Tomatoes too and cucumbers, oh what a lovely spread. And if you do not like that, you can always have instead all together. Oh, one potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. Oh, one potato, two potato, three potato, four, five potato, six potato, seven potato more. And again, one, two, three,
I'm sorry, Paul, that is the worst song you have ever played since we started this program. It's brilliant. Awful.
That was so awful. It was brilliant.
So the fact made us do the dance was a little bit worrying.
Yeah, exactly.
Half our listeners just switched off, I think. Yeah. Shall I introduce Hilary Steele?
I think we ought to.
In case anybody's not aware, which I'm sure they are, Hilary Steele is editor of the Kent Women in Business magazine.
She is indeed.
And she's founder of the Kent Independent Traders Awards and the Kent Women in Business Awards and the Kent Health and Beauty Awards. She's a professional speaker. She's a trainer. She's a businesswoman. And she likes to keep the fun in business. I think we're all well aware of that.
She's the queen of fun. She really is.
Today, despite all those amazing achievements, she's going to talk about potatoes. And she has a website called worldpotatoes.com, where she celebrates the versatile spud. Now, that may seem a very long way from being a business speaker and a business magazine editor to getting down with all things potatoes, but there's a really interesting story behind it, Paul, because In 1989, Hillary's mum, Jennifer, published The Great Potato Cookbook, but you never knew that. And it was very, very popular. And Hillary thought it might be good fun to reproduce her work, and also as a tribute to her mum, who's a real influence in her life, with a more modern twist.
Okay. Sorry, when was the book published, Hillary?
1989. So, Hillary, bearing in mind how busy you are, and every time I see you, you're juggling 500 million things to do with business, why were you inspired to do this?
Well, in 2011, my mum had a stroke, and now she's very lazy and is paralysed in a wheelchair, so she doesn't do any cooking anymore. So every night, pretty much around being busy, I'm at home cooking fresh food, and I started to prepare meals in advance. And just as they did when I was a kid, you know, we didn't have naff food. We were given fresh food as children. And so it started from there. And then I decided to see if I could take some of her recipes and maybe make them a little bit more lively, just to make the chore of having to cook for people that have very diverse eating tastes to me a bit more interesting.
Okay.
I love potatoes, though. I mean, our family, I think our family back a few generations were Irish, and there's got a really strong connection with potatoes. I love potatoes in every form.
It's strange, isn't it? Because in the overall sweep of history, a potato is a fairly new vegetable into Europe over a few hundred years. But we've adopted it in almost every form you could possibly adopt it. And it really has become a mainstay of everything, hasn't it?
Yeah, potatoes originate in South America, the South American, so where Peru and Bolivia is now. And they've been eaten for 7,000, 10,000 years. But yep. I think, Hillary might know this more than me, I think, as Paul said, it's fairly recent in Europe.
It is. It's the Spanish. The Spanish brought it over to Europe. Yes. But it was actually more adopted over in Ireland than Spain to start with. Mm. I'm actually doing a lot of research at the moment, so my knowledge on the actual ins and outs and dates is not spot on rolling off my tongue as yet. But I'm actually reading a book that's called The Biography of the Potato, and it's quite interesting when you think the Spanish actually went over to Peru and they were looking at mining the silver mines, and they all the labour that was put in by the South Americans as were. It's a very interesting story. I think how much they went over there and just totally revolutionised how they took over, really.
Yeah.
Did you know that China's the largest producer of potatoes? You'd never think that.
I didn't know that. I thought it was Idaho.
Idaho. No, it's China. But it is the world's most popular vegetable.
Because they do grow a lot of potatoes in Idaho.
They do. Idaho actually did a periscope. The Idaho potato did a periscope yesterday. We got pulled over by the cops because we're a potato.
Really?
Must watch that replay.
You must explain that. I don't get that at all, Hillary.
Nor do I. That's why I just need to go and see what they really are. A bit crazy.
And for anybody that doesn't know about Periscope, it's a sort of platform that you can live video a talk and presentation, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about your lovely cookbook and exactly what you're doing.
Okay. I came up with the idea to actually do something with it after a chance conversation, which was this time last year, and I went to the domain name buying shop. And I don't know why, but I just looked up the name World of Potatoes. And when it pinged up that it was available, I went, oh, I'll have that.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is, actually, isn't it?
I thought, I'll have that. So I bought the domain name. I set up a Twitter account. But the idea was just to play along as a hobby. Mm. 3 weeks after I launched the website, stuck it up on WordPress, you know, it wasn't something that's, you know, massively extensive. ITV journalist David John at the time picked up on it and then filmed me cooking potatoes, but I had a broken arm, so I was very limited on what I could do, and it was
she doesn't do anything by half, does she? This woman does not do anything by half.
Last time I was talking to her, she was learning fire eating, so that just puts it in
absolutely.
Context.
I've seen her practice in sword swallowing. Yeah.
And this is all true, you just can't make this up, can you?
Yeah.
So it went from there, and then I was going to launch a crowdfunding for the book to be published in October last year. And I went digging potatoes down at Providence Potatoes here in Kent, who have been really supportive and are providing potatoes for some canapes that I'm providing, etc. And I put it on hold a bit because I wanted to build more of a stock of stuff that I had to drip feed the website. Also, I decided in October, November last year to streamline some of my business activities. And I started doing that physically from February this year, so that when I got to June, the phase we're now, I wouldn't have so many things to juggle and I could actually breathe.
Well, I think that's a really good idea. I mean, anybody who knows you cannot believe the amount of things you're involved in terms of business. And I think if you're going to do this, and I know it's something you're very passionate about, you've got to clear the decks a little bit to give yourself room, haven't you, to do it?
Absolutely.
Can you just explain the crowdfunding thing? So how does that work, and what sort of platform are you using to do that?
It's a way that instead of giving away equity in a company, like people raise money externally, it's you're giving away rewards. So I could be giving away a signed copy of the book and a recipe dedicated to you that somebody pledged while I was driving down here today. And then that's actually going to be planned for November this year. So the book will be published by then. So I'm set a certain target that I need to reach, which is the minimum it will take for me to actually get the book published. So that target is only £7,500, which is a lot when you've only got three pledges because you haven't launched properly yet.
So it's effectively what people do is they almost sort of buy either buy a recipe book or whatever it is on this crowdfunding site. Mm. They contribute that money and then you're going to use that money to actually put the book together, get it published and you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I've put in 5,000 of my own money to be able to make this happen because you need editing, you need design people, you need... So sure. That's all being covered. And this is the bare minimum that we can actually get the first 1,000 copies of the book published. Now, there's a reason I could have gone the traditional route. I decided because I had so many creative people involved that I've met working so closely with businesses in Kent, I thought it'd be fantastic to bring some of those people on this, I hate the journey, because it is, and get them involved and actually get them involved in the project. So some of the creative ideas that they've been coming out with have really helped to it. And it'd be so easy to just pay the money yourself and self-publish, whereas this is actually getting a following from all over the world because I do use live streaming platforms, which means I do host TV shows, as it were, online or go on to other people's shows. And so the community's building up. And I've got quite a few fans over in the States and Australia, and they heckle and they're getting involved and they're sending me their potato recipes and they're commenting. One guy on my Facebook page last week, he must have had a few drinks. I think it was Saturday night. And he had a picture of himself holding a pack of potatoes and just tagged World of Potatoes in it. And I just woke up to that the next morning and thought, that's cool.
I do hope he wasn't naked.
No, he wasn't. Okay. No, he wasn't. It was cute, though, to do that.
Right.
And I think that's all part of the PR and publicity machine is trying to work out if you are going to launch something, you know, how are you going to do that? Well, actually, why don't you just take people along with you to actually create the book? And that's an interesting story in itself that you can use.
Yeah.
And I know in terms of publicity too, you've just got a new addition to your family as part of your as part of the whole thing.
I have. Being as I know quite often how to set up a business, I decided very early on that I needed to build a team around me, even though this seems like a fun project. You know, there's a lot of work going into making this book happen. So I engaged the services of a business development and marketing manager who will be joining us in 4 weeks. And at the moment, he is only 4 weeks old and he is a chalky puppy called Spud.
A chalky puppy?
He's a chalky. He's a cross between a Yorkshire Terrier and a Chihuahua.
Thank you for...
You're not impressed by that, Paul, are you?
Chalky.
You were really bought that, didn't you? Oh, my God, she's got a marketing manager. It's a dog.
I was aware because I have seen the puppy pictures. I just didn't know what a chalky was. Good grief.
He's adorable. I'm going to see him this evening again, actually.
Absolutely. She's does he totally like potatoes?
In love. Totally in love.
She's totally in love. If we go back to the recipe book, obviously your mum did some recipes in the original book. Have you spotted any real changes in people's tastes or things that are acceptable, you know, now slightly different from you know, when your mum published hers in the 80s?
To be honest, not notice things that are different, just notice now that there is a lot more ingredients available, so there's a lot more things we can try. I find that, I mean, the book was originally published by a Kent-based company, which was cool, and they've given me the full publishing rights, so I haven't got to worry about any of that side. And when I was exploring the recipes, there's a lot of them in the 80s, they weren't published with pictures of every recipe. So I've tried creating a few and some have turned out really well and some have turned out terrible. I did a first live cooking demonstration on a live streaming platform. The first 6 minutes, everything went completely right. Then it just all went to pot.
Oh, lovely. I wish I'd seen that.
It was brilliant.
What were you cooking, Harry?
I was actually making blood orange muffins, gluten-free muffins. So replacing flour with ground almonds. And mashed potato in it.
I wanted to talk to you about this because I was at 2020 Vision Live a few weeks ago, which is a huge exhibition locally, and I was wandering across the floor amongst thousands and thousands of stands, and all of a sudden Hillary and Sue went, "Whoa, Paul, eat this," and shoved a plate of things in front of me, and they went, "They're muffins," and I took a big bite and they went, "Potato muffins." I went, "Really?" But they weren't potato at all.
They didn't.
But they were.
Yeah.
But they're just muffins. And so I want to explore that. How have you done that? How have you made things out of potato that don't taste the potato?
Well, there's about 25 grams of potatoes in the batch that I made. So it's not overly populated with potatoes. But it just seems to fluff it. It just works. And these mashed potatoes,
oh, they were lovely.
The
They're
ones I made
gorgeous.
With those, I've been looking at mashed potato, which you were talking about earlier. And quite often in the everyday household, mashed potato is generally a bit lumpy, you know, unless you put it through a ricer. So I purposefully left the mashed potato in that batch lumpy to test how they would come out. Didn't make any difference at all. They came out perfectly like a sponge.
Right.
I think we're finding a lot of guests who are looking at different types of things. I mean, we're talking, you know, about the protein mix here and actually being really creative about how they use things, how they mix things, and not just sticking to the fact that if you have potatoes, you know, it's mashed potato. If you have some type of vegetable, it's this. And we are finding, aren't we, Paul, a lot of our guests are really mixing and matching and really experimenting.
There's a lot of innovation going on out there. There's a lot of experimentation. There's a lot of trying different things. There's an element also of bringing back really, really old things and linking them to really, really new things and producing something completely different and new. And I really like that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, we've had some amazing things here. So, Hilary, you've got all these amazing business interests. What advice would you give? I mean, you're very good at marketing and you've got an instinctive feel for how you know, use social media and promote yourself. Anna's obviously quite advanced in that she's now producing stuff and it's going, you know, nationwide. If somebody is setting something up on their kitchen table, what's the best way for them to promote themselves and get themselves known?
I think the first thing is look around your local community, because there are so many groups of people that have the same interests or similar interests or the skills that you're maybe missing, and people are willing to help. People are willing to help. So I would look around your local network
first. So just ask is what you're saying. Yeah. Ask.
And also, what Hillary's done with this world of potatoes is something that I've been talking about for a long time in a lot of other business contexts. And for those of you that have heard me do talks on this, my passion is for smallness and localism and humanness, especially in business. And I don't like big organisations. I don't like big government organisations. I don't like big corporations. And I don't like big businesses because they're detached from people. And I think that the future is about relationships and about humanness and about people. But one of the interesting things is new technology, especially digital technology and social media, has put us in touch with people, so that now you've got this concept, and it's the same for this radio station, actually. It's actually the format of what this radio station is about, where localism and community isn't about geography anymore. It's about a community a community of people that have something in common. So it's a common community, not a geographic community necessarily. And what I loved about what you were saying, Hillary, was a bloke in America taking drunken pictures on a Saturday night with a bag of potatoes. So you've got a following, which is what I call a community of interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they can be in Australia, they can be in Bhutan, they can be in, you know, wherever they want to be, Peru or Wandsworth. It doesn't matter.
They all share the same
passion and the same thoughts and the same feelings around the issues that you're trying to address. And that, I think, is a major, major, major change in the way that we behave economically and socially.
And social media has definitely levelled the playing field.
Oh, without a doubt.
And I think, Hillary, you know, you can actually start these businesses with not much money because of social media and other things, can't you?
You can indeed. I mean, let's say if we're now, because there's a lot more gone on with World of Potatoes that will follow the book and that will turn into a manufacturing business of a product. And a lot of that knowledge has come through being able to have access to these people, talk to these people. But also I've been watching people in globally now, of how they've managed to go from step A to step B. And you think, well, I can actually take part of that and adopt that to my strategy, and then some of my strategy someone in America is adopting for what they're doing, which is completely removed. But at the end of the day, building relationships and getting a product to market, a lot of the steps, whatever the product is, are exactly the same.
Absolutely. Can I go back the other way? And you might not even know this, but sorry to flip backwards and forwards, but I find this fascinating. When Jennifer produced her book, do you know how she went about doing that book? Did she have a book deal, or was it...
She actually was a print buyer for the publishing house, Search Press. They used to do religious and craft books.
Wow.
And now I think they mainly specialise
in
craft
potatoes.
Books. Yeah. And so it was kind of, my mum and I used to mess around doing catering. So I'd be hungover from a student life and go and do a silver service, someone's 50th birthday party. And we just played with food and really enjoyed it, the whole experience. And And then that's where the book was published. So she actually saw it from two sides. She saw it from the role of the print buyer, but also, you know, so she saw it on the presses, etc. And then she saw it, she was cooking. So we were banned from the kitchen a few times. And then, but all the food that was in that, that was very 80s, was eaten as well. It wasn't just made poncy for photography. It was food that was then eaten, which is exactly what I'm doing.
And why potatoes? Why did she home in on that?
I don't know. I don't actually know that.
Just
I
just loves them.
I know it was a discussion that was had because I grew up in a restaurant, so food has always been a thing for us, and it's always been dinner times is the family sit around the table and talk about the day and stuff like that. And I'm still like that because I enjoy that time. I think.
I bet there's a story behind that that would be really fascinating to find out. I know a story. I heard a story once. It wasn't about potatoes, but it was a cooking-related story that just made me laugh. A lady was doing a cookery demonstration on a TV program, and she was cooking a goose or a turkey or a chicken or something, or it may have been lamb. I can't remember what she was cooking. It was meat of some kind. And she said, in preparing this, you cut the two ends off of this and you put it in and you put it in the oven and you bake it for da-da-da-da-da and you put da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And eventually somebody said to her, why do you cut the ends off? And she said, well, funnily enough, it was my mother's recipe. And they went, oh, right, okay, fair enough. And then sometime later, the mother appeared on this program and they said, oh, this trick of cutting the ends off, what's it do to the meat? And she said, well, I think it lets the air circulate and da-da-da-da. She said, but to be honest, it was my mother's recipe. So they eventually contacted the grandmother and they said, this cutting the end off, why'd you do that? She said, because my baking tray's small.
The sort of thing you would do.
It's exactly the sort of thing. But it's become a meme. You know, so two more generations of people were cutting the end off the meat because they thought you had to. And I bet, knowing Hillary... And Hillary's mum must have been fairly similar. I bet there's some really quirky story behind
why she went
for a potato
probably
cookery.
Probably because it was a niche market. It was a niche recipe area.
And a good source of vitamin C. I mean, people sort of harangue potatoes and say that you shouldn't have potatoes. And carbohydrates are getting demonised a bit. But a really good source of vitamin C and so versatile. I'm sure you've got amazing things in that cookbook, Hillary, because so many things you can do.
There are some great stuff, but I've been playing with new stuff as well. So I like potato cakes with a brunch, you know, that Sunday brunch type thing. And I then made those smaller but added chopped onion in and cut them out in pretty little star shapes, made homemade guacamole salsa, and then you've got potato nachos. And that was put on the website yesterday, and they are just a bite size of mm-mm-mm-ness.
Avocados are definitely in at the moment, definitely in food.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've actually got some in my fridge.
My God, that's
I know, healthy. That's unusual for me. I normally have nothing but a moulding bag of celery in my fridge, but I actually have a avocado. But potato is a versatile food, and there's lots of ways of preparing just simple potatoes, you know, from chips to boiled potatoes to mashed potatoes.
Jacket potatoes,
which I have for lunch every day, and... roast potatoes, which are the epitome of potatoism, really, aren't they?
That's my big weakness, roast potatoes.
But roast potatoes are terrible. When I was younger and played football on a regular basis, after the match, we always went back to a pub, because we were sports people, so it was 19 pints of beer because you just play football for an hour. And the landlord used to serve huge bowls of roast potatoes just on the bar that everybody just helped themselves to. Absolutely fabulous.
You know why they do that, don't you? Because they put loads of
salt
in,
on
so
it,
you
and you drink more. Absolutely.
You don't care, you just want the potato.
I was in there, I'd eat the whole bowl of potatoes and drink, although I don't drink alcohol.
Have you got a top tip, Hillary, for the best roast potatoes? How do you do yours?
It depends on what I'm doing. When I did it on ITV, I actually did them in coconut oil. That was just to show that they don't have to be dripping in oil and they still came out crispy. But Christmas time, it's definitely goose fat, semolina sometimes on top, which really crisps them up.
Semolina on top.
Sprinkle semolina on top.
Yeah, makes them a little bit crispy on the top. That's quite nice.
Potatoes and rice pudding.
The other thing you can do is just with a tiny light scrape of Marmite on the bottom, and that makes them really caramelised. That's quite nice.
Or cook them in the meat juices.
Oh, no, you've got to cook them in the meat juices anyway.
No, not if you haven't got a big enough roasting pan.
Hold on a minute. I feel like I'm being schmoozed here.
No, they have to be cooked.
Because I'm going
to
go home I'm going to smear my potatoes in Marmite.
Only a tiny bit.
And goose fat and coconut. And I'm going to cook them, and they're going to be horrible.
No, they'll be absolutely delicious. No, the real key is to cook them in you know, the roast fat. I mean, if you can. Mm. And I think I used to be very worried about having a joint and then, you know, only taking...
You don't want to do that while you're cooking. Oh, God. You get all laid back.
I actually said that completely wrong, didn't I? Okay, so having a meat
joint... I've
just got
these chips.
Having a meat joint and actually remove it for 40 minutes, wrap it in tin foil and just let it, you know, just let it rest.
Yeah.
And then you can cook the potatoes in that without worrying about the size of the roasting tin. Mm. But not say anything more about joints, though.
Yeah. Sorry about that. That wasn't fair, was it?
One of the things I've always wanted to ask you, Hilary, is growing up in a restaurant. And also, I know that you've worked in Italy, so and you're sort of fairly fluent in Italian. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, when I was, the restaurant I was in till I was from naught, I was 6 months old till I was 6 years old, to when we moved down to Kent. That was great fun. I used to hang around in the kitchen and take the end of the pastries and try and make my own pies, which in my memory, they were spot on, spectacular, wonderful pies. They probably weren't because I was only about 3 years old. But when I was 18, I ran away to live in Rome to be an au pair with a broken heart, ran off to find my fortune. So I landed at this poor family's house in Rome that I am still in touch with, and I'm now in my 40s, so I can't have corrupted the children too much. And then I was influenced by a lot of rustic Italian food, you know, and that was quite interesting because it gave me a chance to experiment. Mm. And cooking for the family, I used to play. I mean, I enjoyed being in the kitchen. It's my playtime. It's my relaxed time. When you are so busy, getting in that kitchen, being able to shut the door sort of thing, pour a glass of wine, that's my, almost like a chill out zone. Mm. So quite Italy influenced. Then I spent 4.5 years in Holland and I wasn't very much influenced by the Dutch national cuisine, although they do use a lot of potatoes. But in Holland, you can just, it's literally like London, isn't it? You can just get every type of cuisine. So I've tried lots and I try and experiment, but now I'm fusing countries' flavours a little bit.
I worked in Holland many years ago as
really?
Well. Yeah, in The Hague and in Amsterdam. And at that time, Indonesian food was big, was really big in Holland. Everything had peanuts in it. Mm. Which is okay as long as you don't have a peanut allergy. Otherwise, you're in big trouble.
We're not going back to joints again, are we now?
No, well, that's what made me think of it, to be quite honest, yeah. But they used to have pancake houses as well. Yeah. Cool.
So you've got some amazing influences. You've got a mum who's into potatoes. There's some Dutch influence there, and obviously that Italy influence.
She did a grand tour of Europe, really, didn't she?
Yeah, restaurant. So in a way, Hilary, given all these things that you're doing, it was going to be pretty inevitable that you're going to go into the food sector at some point, really, don't you think? Even if you hadn't thought about it consciously, I think probably that was going to happen.
Now I know what's happening and towards the end of the year, and I look back on especially the last 5 years, I can see that why everything that we've done has led to this moment, because I wouldn't be able to have the ambitions I have for the other potato stuff that's coming after the book if I hadn't experienced, you know, the world of business as I have, the corporate side.
And you've got your awards coming up soon. I hope you don't mind me talking about those. And it would be very interesting in terms of Anna's sort of perspective. Mm. Is if you're new and you're starting a new venture, is it a good idea to enter some of these awards? You know, does it give you some credibility if you're a winner of a sort of local business award? Like, I know Paul's been Entrepreneur of the Year and things like that. Do you think it might help small businesses in the food sector, give them a bit of credibility and a bit of profile?
I think the help is priceless, not only for making you look at your business maybe with external eyes from outside in, which a lot of business owners don't, because they're so busy getting going, and the old saying, isn't it, work on your business, not in your business, and that kind of thing. But also, once you've got, if you get to that stage where you're a finalist, you can use that in your promotional opportunities. And I'm saying I'm a finalist, or I'm an award-winning potato cook, I'm an award-winning supplier.
Absolutely.
I mean, that does count for something. And people that are looking to buy your products, work with you, whatever, that does add credibility, not to mention the publicity that goes with it.
I would, as you said, I was lucky enough to win a couple of awards a few years ago.
I don't think that was luck, Paul, to be honest. I think you're being a bit modest there.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing is, exactly as Hilary says, it gives you credibility, it gives you some gravitas, but you must use it. You know, some people win awards and they go, oh, I've won an award. And then they put it on the shelf and that's it. But you have to build it into what you're doing so that people know and recognise it, because it is a massive benefit. Otherwise, why did you enter the awards? You know, to win an award or even become a finalist, it's a great signal.
It's a good process.
Especially with awards like Hillary's Kent Women in Business Awards and her Health and Beauty Awards and the Kent Independent Traders Awards. Those things are voted on by your peers. you know, the people that, sorry, the judges that pick what you're doing, they are people that run businesses in your area. And they've said, you know, you are good.
Yeah.
You are really good. And they've looked at, I've been a judge on a couple of the awards that Hillary runs. And you read all this stuff about these people and you think, wow, this is unbelievable. Yeah. This is unbelievably amazing. So to come out on top of that pile of really good businesses as well is a fabulous thing to do.
Mm. So can I just ask Anna a question, if that's okay? Anna, you've obviously started and you're doing your nationwide thing. Have you got a one top tip if somebody's starting business and they want to make that leap where you are? Hillary's really great at the sort of publicity promotion. What would you advise people to do?
I would go back and say the social media bit is huge and crucial. I mean, that's how I build a brand. Without people behind it, you're just, you know, a brand that nobody knows. So actually connecting with people, like Hillary said, across the world and building a name and just not being someone that talks at people, that actually engages with people in different platforms, I think that's huge. Yeah.
So Hillary talks to me about this a lot, and that's about forming relationships, not just getting sales. It's about making relationships with people.
Absolutely.
And getting people to promote you. So absolutely. Hillary, you're very good at embracing social media. What would you advise people? Twitter, Facebook, just anything that you think your target audience will be on?
I think you obviously need to know where your target audience is, but if you told me 12 months ago that I would be Snapchatting away, like I've already done a few snaps since we've been here, I would not have believed you, because my perception of that was for the youngsters. But it's not. I'm getting a following and a lot of comments and a lot of snaps back from people, and of course I've chosen to use Snapchat as Hillary the World of Potatoes. So it's targeting and also having a plan. What do you want to get out of it? You know, just saying I've spent 7 hours on social media doesn't actually get you results.
Absolutely.
And if you don't know this stuff, get somebody in that can help you, I'm guessing, is your
definitely
advice.
Absolutely. I think there are different platforms for different things. As most people know here, I'm a Twitter tart. I just, you know, I'm just mad on Twitter. But I recently joined Instagram, and so far all I do is post the shirts. I'm a big shirt buyer. I buy myself a new shirt every Saturday, and at the moment I just post each shirt that I buy every Saturday, and loads of people comment on it.
I have to say, you wear very, very nice shirts. I don't normally compliment you, but you do.
Thank you.
Nice shirts. Not so sure about the trousers.
Yeah.
Can we recap, I think?
Yeah, go for it.
So if you're interested in potatoes, World of Potatoes, you've just got to have a look. You've got to go and have a look at the crowdfunding thing. Certainly in our business, we've backed Hillary because it's really worth doing. Hillary's got her own website called Hillary Steele, without an E on the end, .com. Or, of course, if you just do the worldofpotatoes.com, that's really good fun. And we've got Protein Pal. Really good product, proteinpal.com. And Anna Sward really, really knows what she's doing in terms of business. And I'm sure that's just going to go from strength to strength.
And she makes really, really, really good gorgeous banana bread.
Yeah. Just if in case anybody wants to know, it's in a little bit of tin foil. And as usual, Paul's stolen it and he's going to take it home.
So I am indeed. That is my
no
supper
chance
for tonight.
Of eating any more. I would recommend you have it with a bit of butter on the top, though. And of course, if you want to know how to make real good mashed potato, download the podcast and that's how you do it. That's how you get great fluffy mashed potato every time.
Fantastic. Thank you. We've kind of reached the end of the Food Talk Show for another week here on channelradio.co.uk. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to hear from both Anna and Hillary on the show. Sue and I will be back with you next week
Indeed.
With another Food Talk Show. In the meantime, happy cooking, happy eating, happy food inventing.
Buy some potatoes.
Yeah, absolutely. See you all. We'll be back next week.
Goodbye.